Welcome, everyone. I'm Marilyn Stern, Associate Fellow with the Forum, and I'll be your chair. Today, we're very pleased to welcome Mr. Burak Bektil, who will be speaking to us today from Ankara, Turkey, on our topic, Turkey's forthcoming elections. The March 30th local elections will be seen as a referendum on the legitimacy of Prime Minister Erdogan and his AK party. Mr. Bektil is a Turkish columnist with Hurriyet Daily News. His work has been published in international media outlets such as The Economist, National Review Online, The Jerusalem Post, Le Figaro, and The Washington Times. Mr. Bektil also contributes to annual reviews for anti-corruption institutions like Transparency International and Global Integrity. Today, Mr. Bektil will offer his insights about the escalating political and economic turmoil in Turkey amid the corruption probe plaguing Prime Minister Erdogan. Erdogan responded by thwarting constitutional freedoms in order to consolidate political control and eliminate challenges to his increasingly autocratic tendencies. What are the likely outcomes for Erdogan's AK party and its challengers if Erdogan's oppressive rule does or does not survive? Mr. Bektil?
Good afternoon, everyone. I shall start by briefly revisiting Turkey's political landscape about a year ago, that is, the first quarter of 2013. Prime Minister Erdogan was increasingly confident of his popularity, as evidenced by a slew of public opinion polls at that time, which put voters' support for his ruling AK Party at anywhere between 50% to 56%. And his closest political rival, the main opposition, CHP, came with less than half of that, at around 24-25% of the national vote, according to the same research. No rival to Erdogan was or could be in sight anytime in the foreseeable future. He had, in the first place, consolidated power. The army had been successfully tamed, with its top brass behaving utterly loyal to Erdogan. He had just started a peace process with the Kurds, and there were strong signs of a truce which would reinforce his victory at local elections a year later, in March 2014. And against this background, the economy was performing relatively well. So he felt so comfortable that he rather devoted his political energy to an ambitious project of social engineering, which he had declared half a year earlier. That was about raising devout Muslim generations. When criticized that raising devout or non-devout generations should not be the job of a prime minister, he replied simply that should we instead raise children who are drug addicts? So in his thinking, someone could either be devout or a drug addict. So that kind of logic revealed clearly his deep dislike of anyone who is not a devout Muslim. With so much consolidated power, Erdogan was increasingly arrogant and pursuing political majoritarianism. In one particular remark, he said, we have a problem with the media. It should be their mission to announce good things to the nation. This is what I want. And abroad, his obsession to overthrow al-Assad in Syria and replace his regime with a Sunni Muslim Brotherhood type of government, preferably subservient to the emerging Turkish Empire, was becoming stronger but less successful. His ideological and pragmatic hostility towards Israel kept on adding to his popularity at home in the meantime. In one particular remark at a United Nations panel, he said that Zionism was a crime against humanity, and he just shrugged off criticism that came afterwards. He had one problem, though, a problem growing silently, a problem whose potential danger he probably miscalculated. Muslim cleric Fethullah Gülen's Hizmet movement, his principal political ally in the previous decade, was slowly turning against him. In fact, the first crack between the two conservative groups had emerged after the Marmara incident in May 2010. AK Party's top brass had preferred to ignore Gülen's public statement at that time that said the flotilla should never have tried to breach the naval blockade of Gaza. That was clearly in sharp contrast with AK Party's fiercely pro-Hamas, anti-Israeli rhetoric. Later, Erdogan's increasingly authoritarian rule, his anti-pluralistic ideology and governance, and confrontational policy against other nations or faiths convinced his Met that Erdogan was becoming an ideological burden to this massive global movement whose principal message is interfaith dialogue, tolerance, and peace. So the basic question here was, how could a faith at war with its less developed members be at peace with other faiths? In every sense, Erdogan was undermining Gulenist's doctrinaire raison d'etre in many ways. So in those days, Erdogan had a grand plan in his mind, which looked almost perfect. His party had a self-imposed rule in its own constitution that limits parliamentary election for any party member, including Erdogan, to just 3 terms. And other key parameters in his plan were local elections in March 2014, presidential elections, first time by popular vote, in August 2014, and parliamentary elections in 2015. So his lifelong political comrade, Abdullah Gulen, was the president, but with largely symbolic powers. And he was the plan. AK Party wins around 50% of the vote in municipal elections in March 2014. Then Gül steps down for a Putin Medvedev-style job swap. Erdogan gets elected to presidency, still with largely symbolic powers. And then finally in 2015, AK Party wins parliamentary elections with a constitutional majority. And the party then amends the constitution to introduce an executive presidential system. And finally, Erdogan becomes the all-too-powerful ruler of Turkey, with powers that he could even dissolve parliament. Then came on May 31st, a month-long protest at the Gezi Park in Istanbul, which later turned into a nationwide anti-government movement. I don't want to spend much time on this movement, but suffice it to say that Gezi was the spark of what could eventually be an unexpected metamorphosis of Turkey's entire political landscape. If Gezi was the most powerful political challenge to Erdogan's rule since 2002, the shocking graft investigations, dozens of embarrassing tape recordings leaked to the public domain, and subsequent evidence of crystal clear malgovernance since December 17th were even more powerful challenges, threatening to reshuffle Erdogan's entire political roadmap, which he had devised a year ago. So where do we stand today? I think there's little doubt that Erdogan remains the most popular leader despite serious corruption allegations and substantial evidence that accompanies these allegations. You might find it a bit bizarre to understand this, but Turkish voters traditionally tend to vote more on economic perceptions than principles of good governance. But doubtlessly, AK Party's popularity will decline on March 30. But how can we calculate a party's popularity from a municipal election in which the nation will elect their mayors? In past elections, this was relatively easy. One would simply look at the city council votes cast for parties, not candidates. In Turkish local elections, voters do not only vote for mayoral candidates, but also make party choices for city councils. In March 2009 local elections, for instance, AK Party had won 38.8% of the national vote. But a recent legal amendment increased the number of metropolitan municipalities to 30 from an earlier 16. So in this case, a good method to calculate parties' nationwide votes could be to look at both the votes for individual party candidates in those 30 metropolitan municipalities and to city council votes in the remaining 51 provinces. That will give us reliable statistics about parties' nationwide popularity. So how much damage would AK Party have to undergo on the evening of March 30 will give us a clear idea on what future options Turkish politics will have from March 31st till parliamentary elections in 2015 and perhaps even beyond. Apparently, AK Party has revised downwards its success criteria to avoid a public embarrassment. And mind you, this is not just an election for Erdogan, but a decisive battle in an existential war he now fights. For him, this is not about winning or losing an election. This is going to be about a total control over ruling Turkey or risking a life sentence due to potential scores of prosecutions he now has temporarily averted by suspending and reassigning thousands of judges, prosecutors, and law enforcement officers since December 17th. A year ago, the party management was talking about more than 50% as success criteria in March 2014. Today, they officially set the success criteria to any vote over 38.8%, which was AK Party's vote in 2009. Gulenists, who invariably voted for AK Party in previous elections, have privately pledged to support AK's rivals throughout Turkey this time. But not only that, they are now knocking on every door to convince AK Party supporters not to vote for Erdogan's party or candidates, citing all these corruption charges. According to pro-Gulen media, AK Party's popularity has already gone down to 35%, which, if true, could be the beginning of the end for Erdogan. And here, I want to discuss various scenarios based on different vote results. In my first scenario, AK Party miraculously wins between 45% to 50% of the vote in local elections. So under this scenario, with refreshed self-confidence, Erdogan may call for snap polls and return to his original roadmap based on presidency. And again, in this scenario, with or without early parliamentary elections, he will be seeking constitutional majority that would pave the way for an executive presidency for him. And my second scenario, AK Party wins 40 to 45% of the vote, and Erdogan decides this should be sufficient for a national vote of confidence, but changes plans this time. He scraps the self-imposed party rule that limits parliamentary elections to three terms. President Gül gets re-elected as president this summer, and Erdogan continues on as prime minister, hoping to win 50% of the vote in 2015. And finally, my third scenario is this time AK Party vote drop to the 35% to 40% band. Alarm bells are ringing, and the president's silent dissent within AK Party turns loud, and groups of politicians motivated simply by political opportunism start to think that the AK Party is a sinking ship now, and they are ready to rush to a new boat. A new conservative party is formed. The new party portrays itself as non-confrontational, center-right, pluralistic, moderate, pro-dialogue, and liberal. It attracts politicians from most of the political spectrum, and the party's official manifesto and program pledge the opposite of everything Erdogan has done over the past few years. The new party promises to end Turkey's deep ideological polarization by establishing perhaps a historic handshake between the conservatives, seculars, and leftists. This will produce two options for the presidential election. In scenario A, Gül gets re-elected because AK Party is still the most popular party. But in scenario B, the opposition parties, including the new center-right party, find compromise on a single presidential candidate who then defeats Gül. In either case about the presidential elections, as the country nears parliamentary elections in 2015, AK Party is losing further ground, while the new party successfully establishes itself by both dividing AK Party's votes and increasing its own. And finally, in elections in 2015, CHP emerges as the first party, let's say with 30% of the vote, while the AK Party has now fallen to, let's say again, 28-29%. The new party wins 20% of the vote, while the nationalistic MHP vote remains flat at its present level of about 15%. This picture would easily produce a grand coalition between Turkish neoconservatives and social democrats. I can understand that this looks like an over-optimistic scenario. Probably it is, but I think you should note that a year ago it would look like a near impossibility, whereas today it is a possibility. Thank you very much.